72 Parshas Emor. Okay, last Parsha dealt with the commandment of the Jews being holier than the Goyim. And therefore he gave us the laws of kosher, not kosher, the forbidden relations, the kosher relations. The Torah ended up by saying you should separate between what's kosher, what's not kosher. So basically, in the previous Parsha of Kedeshim, the Torah was speaking a lot about the Kedusha, the difference between Jew and non-Jew. Now the Torah is continuing, so to speak, to a higher level. The difference within Jews themselves, Kohanim, and the rest of the people. Kohanim are Kadeshim, holy, in respect to the rest of the nation. So now Hashem is going step two, so to speak, that even in Jewish people themselves, there's a different level of purity demanded from a Kohen than there is from everybody else. Okay, so the Torah starts off like this. V'yam Hashem al Moshe, Hashem said to Moshe, Emer al ha-Kohanim b'nei Aaron, speak to the Kohanim, the children of Aaron, v'amart aleihem, and you should tell them, l'nefesh l'yitama v'amov, you should not become impure to a dead body. Okay, this is the simple meaning of the pasuk. There's a lot to talk on this pasuk, but Rashi comments and says, what is the double expression, Emer al ha-Kohanim v'amart aleihem, it's a double expression. But like Rashi, Emer v'amarta, why does he say and say again? So, there's different answers. Ibn Ezra answers, because the Kohanim were basically the dedicated Jews, so they learned Torah a lot. Like the Levium, in Mitzrayim, even Levi was the Rosh Yeshiva of the whole Yeshiva in Mitzrayim. So the Levium was Yoram Mishpatach Yaakov, like Moshe Rabbeinu said on his, in Zeis HaBracha. So because the Kohanim were the teachers, so therefore it says, V'amar V'amarta, the Kohanim not only should tell it to the Kohanim, but they should teach it to others. Another thing that Ramban explains, that what's the double expression, Emer V'amarta, because we know when things are extremely important, the Torah repeats itself. Hecheach, techiach, hashev, toshev. You know, a lot of times the Torah repeats itself because of the importance of it. So the same thing over here, the Torah repeats itself because of the importance. That's what the Ramban says. Rashi says, from the Medrash, from the Gemara, what's the double expression, Emer v'amarta? Lahazi, Rashi says, G'day l'malaktan. That the adults are warned for the children. In other words, not only are the adults obligated themselves, but lahazir gedalim alaktani means literally to warn the gedalim, the adults, for the kids. That's the way Rashi learns. The word lahazir not only means to warn, but lahazir comes from the word zohir, zohar, which means actually to shine. Lahazir gedalim alaktanim, it means in a deeper sense than Mefarshim explained, the adults have to be a shining example for the kids. Lahazir not only means to warn and to teach, but lahazir means to shine, meaning they need to be a living example, a shining example. The adults need to be a shining example for the kids. As everybody knows in education, that you could teach and preach to your kids whatever you want. You know, you could teach them don't lie. The second you lie, all your teaching is out the window. You need to be a living example of what it is, what it needs to be. But there's a very interesting thing. We find in Torah, three times, by three mitzvahs, that the Torah warns the adults for the kids. This concept, Lahazir G'day L'malaktanim, is mentioned three times in Chumash. One is by eating blood. When the Torah forbids a Jew to eat blood, the Torah says over there also the expression, you need to warn the adults for the kids. Second time the Torah says it is by not eating bugs, insects. By not eating bugs and insects, the Torah says also the adults have to warn the kids. The third time the Torah says, Lahazir G'day L'malaktanim, is in this parsha by the laws of purity and impurity of a Kohen. So there's a sikha from the Rebbe. The Rebbe explains, why does the Torah pick these three? I mean, the truth is, every mitzvah you have to teach the children. What is the emphasis? There seems to be a unique lesson from these three mitzvahs, not eating blood, not eating bugs, and the purification of a Kohen that other mitzvahs don't have. So the Rebbe explains, like we said before, the Hazeh Gedele Malaktane means the education of the adults to the children. Concerning blood, we learned this already before, the Torah uses the expression, Rak Chazak Levilti Achol Adam. Should strengthen yourself and don't eat blood. So Rashi over there in Chumash says, why does the Torah say strengthen yourself and don't eat blood? Because in those days, people were indulged, as Rashi uses the expression, Shtufe Bedamim Hayu. They were indulged in eating blood. They were so into eating blood, the Torah has to say, Chazak, strengthen yourself and don't eat blood.
What kind of blood?
Animal blood, human blood, whatever, especially animal blood they used to eat. That's what Rashi says in Chumash. It wasn't mine. See, I didn't say it. The Torah says, Chazak levilti achol adam. Rashi said, why is the Torah strengthen you? The Torah doesn't say, strengthen yourself and don't eat chazer. The Torah strengthened because the person needed strengthening because they were overly indulged in eating blood. When it comes to education, sometimes a person can think, how could I educate a kid? They're so indulged in it. They're so much into it. How do you expect me to educate a kid to stop it? How do you expect me to the kid is so into it. You're going to tell me to stop it? I mean, come on, be realistic. The Torah says, even in a case where kids are indulged in something, the Torah says, Lahazig Gedele Malaktan, you still have a mitzvah to educate them properly. Then there's a second mitzvah, it's called eating bugs. Eating bugs is gross. Okay? Who wants to eat bugs? It's despicable. In fact, bugs are called Sheket Sulachem. The Torah says, it's abominable. It's despicable. Right? So, comes education, somebody can think the kids are doing such despicable things. They're so far out already, how in the world do you expect me to educate them? Right? They're too gone already. They're too far lost. They're even doing things which are despicable. The Torah says, even in that case, you don't give up hope on a kid, and you have to warn the adults for the kids too. Then it comes a third level of education, the purity of a Kohen. The laws of purity and impurity, as the Rambam says, is completely illogical. They don't make sense. Purity and impurity is an ultimate chok, the ultimate illogical mitzvah. So some people come and say like this. You know, you want to teach kids Yiddishkeit, you need to teach them things that make sense. You're going to teach them things that don't make sense. How can you teach them? Because they're never going to believe you. They're never going to believe you. Like it says, many people, it's brought down, that many people were opposed of teaching children the miracles of Torah. He said, come on, they're so far-fetched, they're not going to believe it. The Torah says they believe it more than the adults do. The Torah says even when it comes to the laws of purity and impurity, which completely doesn't make sense, even those laws, lahazid gdeila malaktanim, you have an obligation to teach the children. And therefore the Torah picks these three mitzvahs, blood, which a person is indulged in, bugs which are despicable, and the laws of purity and impurity which are completely irrational, that any one of these three types of education, the Torah says, Lahazid Gdeilu Malaktanim, you need to warn the adults to be a shining example of how to educate the children. That's the first thing over here. Then it says like this, Emer al-Kayanim b'nei Aharon. So number one, the Gemara learns out from here, by the way, that girl Kohanim, a Bas Kohen, is allowed to become impure. And that's the halacha. A Bas Kohen, a daughter of a Kohen, could go to cemeteries. Because the Torah says, Emer al HaKohanim b'nei Aharon, the sons of Aaron, which excludes, Rashi says also, V'loi b'nei Sadin. Okay? The Gemara says, the Gemara learns it out in Saita, that the girl Kayanim can become Tomei. There's a very interesting Shaila in Halacha, by the way. Can the wife of a Kayin, who's pregnant, go to a cemetery? Mrs. Cohen, Mrs. Kayin, who's pregnant, with a child, can she go to the cemetery? No, the question could... Well, what's the question? She might be having a boy. And if the baby's a girl, it's not a problem, because a girl could become tummy, just like she could. If it's a boy, then the
kid...
So I'm not saying whether she should or not, but in Halach it says she's allowed to go. It's a double doubt. Number one, Halach says this. Maybe, God forbid, she'll miscarry, maybe not. You don't know for sure she's going to have a baby. And secondly, even if she has a baby, 50-50, it's a girl. So it's a double doubt. So therefore, Halach says, the wife of a Kohen, is a pregnant wife of a Kohen, is allowed to go into a cemetery. The shaila is, what would be if she knows for sure she's having a boy? Let's say, even though it's not for sure, even then. But then you would have a bigger shaila, because that's not a double doubt, then it's only a single doubt. Maybe she'll miscarry, maybe not. But if she knows she's having a boy, then maybe, even then it's questionable in halacha, if she would be allowed to go or not. What?
Can a female Kohen marry a divorcee? Like a man is divorced?
A divorce. Yeah. A Kohen, Miss Kohen, can marry a divorcee, yes.
But some people say that
that's what I said. I did. I said I gave it an introduction.
What's the question in English?
There is a minig in many places that women who are in childbearing years don't go to cemeteries at all. There's a woman is a nida. There's a minig not to go to a cemetery. Pregnant women also have a minig, they don't go to cemeteries. There's a lot of minig. We're talking now halacha. This is all minhag versus halacha. Halachically, a woman is allowed to go to a cemetery. A pregnant woman is allowed to go to a cemetery. Okay? So there, Dina, I'm just saying, conceptually, in halacha itself, discusses halachically, can a pregnant wife of a Kohen go into a cemetery? Because it's, so to speak, 75-25%. So it says like this, Emer HaKohenim B'nei Aaron, okay, so now, besides this reason that we said, why the Torah says B'nei, to teach us girls, the laws of Tumah don't apply, but the question over here is, from a deeper level, like, why does the Torah say, the Klei Yoker asks, don't we know that the Kohenim are B'nei Aaron? I mean, somebody says, Kohenim b'nei Aaron. Why does the Torah need to say, HaKohenim b'nei Aaron? Right? So the Klei Yoker says a very interesting thing. He says that I would think that only Aaron himself cannot go to a cemetery. Why? Because he's the original source of it. I would think if the Torah didn't say b'nei Aaron, I would think that only the original Kohen who's like appointed straight from God, maybe he can't go to a cemetery. But maybe his descendants, which are not the original level of Kedusha, so to speak, so I would think maybe they would be able to. So therefore the Torah says no. Okay, so therefore he says like this, L'nefesh lo yitama ba'amov, L'nefesh lo yitama ba'amov, to a nefesh, you're not allowed to become tummy. Okay, meaning you can't become tummy to a dead body. Now, there's also an interesting thing over here. Why does it say lenefesh and not benefesh? Why is it using the word nefesh? Why is it using the word lenefesh lo yitama ba'amav? Why doesn't it use just the lemes lo yitama ba'amav? To a dead body, he should not become tummy. So the Mefarshim explain like this. Number one, there's a rule, and this is a very interesting thing. Impurity sets in only where holiness existed and left. In other words, the whole concept of Tumah is only where there was a nefesh. For instance, there's no iser for a kohen to come and touch a dead carcass of an animal. Why? Because an animal, even though, by the way, the dead carcass of an animal, if it wasn't shechted in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, then the veilah was tamei. But if you shechted an animal, right, you shechted it properly, the dead animal was not tamei. At all not. A kohen could touch it, anybody could touch it. The question, why not? It's a dead body. Why isn't there tumah there? The answer is because there was never kedusha to begin with. In a place where there is kedusha, and the holiness leaves, there becomes a vacuum, and then tumah sets in. And by the way, it's interesting, there's a whole argument in the Gemara, if a non-Jew also has this level of tumah. Is the body of a non-Jew tumah or not? It's an argument in the Gemara. The halacha is that the body of a goy is tumah, for a kohen to touch it, but it's not the same level of impurity. For instance, God forbid if there's a dead Jewish body in a room, everything in the room becomes tumah. In other words, a kohen cannot be in the same room as a dead body. So a kohen cannot walk into a mortuary, you know, if there's a dead body there. In fact, many places kohenim don't even go to hospitals, depending how the morgue is set up, because there might be a dead body there in the morgue, and then depending how the rooms are set up with the tumah moving around, whatever it is, many kohenim taka don't go in, and certain hospitals taka you're not allowed to go into for a kohen, because there might be a dead Jewish body. But even though there's an argument in the Gemara, which is in Rav Shimon and the Chachamim, if a goy is metama ba'oyel, if a goy makes the room impure if it's under the same roof, and the halacha is that a goy is not metama ba'oyel. A goy is not. A Jew is. That means, God forbid, if there'll be a dead body in this room, the kohenim would have to run out. But if there's a non-Jew buried in this room and nobody's touching it, a kohen doesn't have to walk out. Okay? Why? Because the Torah says later on in Parshas Chukas, Adam ki yamuz ba'ayil. If Adam, and the Gemara says, Atam kriyam Adam, the Jews are called Adam. So therefore it doesn't... By the way, this is not such an easy thing. You know, when if a Jew takes a flight to Israel, there's a big issues with this, by the way. If a kohen is flying to Israel, sometimes they take bodies from America to Israel, right, to bury. So is there a body on the plane? Is there not? So certain...
But the body is not really...
Okay, so these halachas are extremely complicated.
Rabbi.
There is, okay, just in it, in a nutshell, okay, if there's a dead body in this room, God forbid, and you have a tefach, okay, 3 inches or 4 inches between the body and the roof and the ceiling, so the tumah only goes up to the ceiling, stops at the ceiling. Anything at the second floor would not become tumah. Okay? But if the room is full all the way to the ceiling, then the tumah keeps going to the second floor. Okay? These are completely logical dinim, but this is the halacha. If the mess, between the mess and the roof, there's empty space of a tefach, I think I'm pretty sure it's a tefach, then the tumah goes up and stops. If there's no empty space, like if you fill up the cargo, then the mamash goes to the floor of the plane, then the tumah is going to keep going. So there are ways of doing it. In fact, many very religious kohenim, because it is, don't fly alal to Israel. Because usually, you can assume that if there is a body, it's probably an alal. Right? So they won't fly alal because maybe there's a body there. Or also call up and find out if there's, whatever, you know, whatever it may be. But again, I don't want to get into all these nitty gritty, gory details, right? So it says like this, the holy place where Kedusha exists, Mtum exists, is where Kedusha existed and it leaves. In fact, we learned, we learned that first a Jew wakes up in the morning, you need to do Netilah, you need to do what's called Naglavasir. Right? You need to do Naglavasir. You can't touch your eyes, you can't touch your food, you can't do anything until you wash Naglavasir. By a guy that doesn't apply. The guy doesn't have to wash Naglavasir. If you have a housekeeper, then come to your house in the morning, you don't make him wash Naglavasir. Yeah? Why don't you need to make a guy do Naglavasir? They're touching your food, they're preparing the food, or whatever they're going to be doing. The answer is, because the reason why the Jews' fingertips, are tamei in the morning, because they have a neshama. At night, the neshama goes up. So therefore, when the neshama leaves, vacuum time, tumah comes in. When the person wakes up in the morning, the tumah leaves. But, our sages tell us, it remains on the fingertips. Therefore, you need to wash your hands to get rid of the tumah. But a non-Jew that doesn't have a neshama like that, so tumah never set in. So there's no need in any way whatsoever that there's tumah on the fingernails and the fingers. So that's why he doesn't have to do it. So this is why the Torah says, "Lenefesh lo yitama ba'amav." Okay, so like he says the expression, the Kliyoker says, by animals there's no shem bam nefesh hameskeles. Ein misosam, this is what the Kaliyaka says. The death of an animal is the separation of the four elements in the animal. It's not actually the Malachamov is coming to kill them. He says, Aval nishma sa'odam, ein yaitz kimay de Malachamovis. The angel of death comes and kills a person against their will, and therefore tumah sets in. And he says, that explains why the Gemara says that tzaddikim, even when they're dead, do not necessarily make tumah. Why? Because he says tzaddikim don't die through the malach hamavis. Tzaddikim die, like it says, al pi Hashem, misis neshikin. Hashem kisses the neshama and it leaves. Like it says in Chumash by Moshe and Aaron. In fact, there's a very interesting Gemara in Ksubis. The end of Ksubis, the Gemara says like this, Mishameis Rabbi, Rabbi Yudah Nossi, passed away, but le kuhuna. And the Mefarshim explain, according to one of many opinions, what does it mean, but le kuhuna? The laws of impurity of a Kohen didn't apply. They allowed the Kohenim to go to Rabbi's funeral. Okay? And in fact, Taisus on the side of the Gemara says, there was one of the Bali Taisus, his name is Reb Chaim HaKoyen. He said, Ilu Hayisi, Kshameis Rabbeinu Tam. He says, if I would have been there when Rabbeinu Tam died, this Reb Chaim HaKoyen is saying, I would also have gone to his funeral. Because the tzaddikim, but it is very questionable today. Lepel today, Koyenim, don't go to cemeteries even if tzaddikim, unless if there are walls around it, whatever, you know. And various different things, because Lepel today, and it's a big shout in Aloch, if it applies today, whatever the story is, so today people are machmir that even to funerals of tzaddikim, they don't go unless they're 6 feet away, or they're not under any trees, you know, things like that. But this is why it says, Linefesh lo yitama, why it says Linefesh, because the reason what's causing the tumah is the nefesh. If there wouldn't be a nefesh, there wouldn't be any tumah. So therefore the Torah says, not benefesh, or the Torah is saying, l'nefesh l'yitama ba'amav. Okay, that's this pasuk. Oh, now, there's another halacha the Gemara learns like this. Why does the Torah say, l'nefesh l'yitama ba'amav? L'nefesh l'yitama. Don't become tummy. Why does it say ba'amav to its nation? So Rashi brings on also from the Medrash News, by the way, the halacha. Ba'amav means in the nation when there's somebody to take care of the dead body. There's something called a meis mitzvah. A meis mitzvah means if a kohen is walking in the street and there's a dead body and there's nobody to take care of it, to bury it and take care of it, the din is a kohen becomes tamei and buries the dead body. So the question, maybe not. Maybe the kohen should just keep going, you know. So Gemara learns it out from this word, ba'amav. Ba'amav means when it's amongst the nation. Meaning when there's people to take care of the dead body, the Torah says, lo yitama ba'amav. But if there's nobody to take care of the dead body, the Torah is telling us, then a kohen even becomes tamei. In fact, there's an interesting halach in the Gemara, and the Rambam brings it down. What happens, a nazir can also not become tamei. Right? So what happens if a nazir and a kohen are walking, and they find a dead body, without any, a mes mitzvah, who should become tamei? The kohen or the nazir? Hey, let's have an argument.
Paper stone.
Pick a number from 1 to 10.
They have a game, whoever loses.
The halacha is, the nazir becomes tamei. Why? A kohen is a lifetime kuhuna. A nazir is for the duration of being a nazir. A nazir is temporary for the duration of how long he's a nazir. But a kohen, that's a permanent thing, and therefore it's stricter with the kohen.
Can't a nazir make himself a nazir for lifetime?
Yeah, but even then there's certain different dinim than a regular person. Okay, now the pasuk says in pasuk beis, who could a kohen become tamei for? Who could a kohen become tamei for? It says like this: Kiyam l'sheirei hakadav elav, only for the relative who is closest to him, which the Gemara interprets this to mean a wife. Relax. Li'imei ul'aviv, to his mother and his father, li'vnei ul'avita li'achiv, son, daughter, and brother. So, so far we have like this. Who could a kohen become tamei to? For his wife, mother, father, son, daughter, brother, and L'achayse apsula kreva elov, to a single unmarried sister. Once a kohen's sister is married, then he cannot become tamei for her. Because, so to speak, even if she married a kohen, she still left the family, so she's not exactly part of the seven relatives that the Torah allows a kohen to become tamei for. But you have to understand, this din, just to explain another practical thing in today, when the Torah says a kohen could become tamei for his father, mother, brother, sister, whatever it is, that's only to the funeral. Going home from the funeral, he cannot become tamei going over graves. Because that's not for the funeral anymore, that's going back. So therefore, the din is, if in from places, kohenim are buried near the end of the cemetery, like the row, right near the gate of the cemetery. And they have, no, kohenim are buried there because the relatives are kohenim.
What if it's a mother of the kohen is being buried?
I understand. So the question, how could the son go? Right, so I'm saying in order for the kohen to go, right. In order for the kohen to go, they'll bury them, let's say, if this is the end, the cemetery, they'll bury him on this row, okay, in the front places, and they won't have any trees over this part of the cemetery, that the kohen can come, the son can come visit his mother's graves on the other side of the fence, but he's right next to the grave. Because even a kohen cannot go visit, this is only for the actual funeral. A kohen cannot go visit his parents' grave if it's the middle of a cemetery somewhere. Unless, if you could drive in, then the car is a mechitza. You drive in on the road, and if there's no trees hanging over the road, and over graves, so then there's no tent. So you get up, you get out of the car, and you stand on the road, so then they'll try to bury the kohen's relatives, let's say right near the road, where there's no trees, and as long as he's 6 feet away from the grave, and there's no trees overhanging, so then he could be there also. But I'm saying these are all issues that have to be dealt with in the laws of a kohen, because a kohen could become tamei for his father and mother, but he can't walk back through the cemetery back to the car, or back to his horse and buggy, or whatever. Because that already is not... If he's 6 feet away from any grave and there's no trees, he's not Tomei.
So then, are you saying that a coin can become Tomei and go up to the grave?
He cannot. Okay. For the funeral, yeah, but not, that's it.
Even at the funeral, he can.
He can, but the question is, if they're buried in the middle of a row and he's going to go up through the graves, how's he going to get back? Unless they pick him up in a helicopter. It's not a bad idea. Start a new business.
Save time.
Kohenim helicopter business. Huh?
Kohen
copters.
I would like it only for Kohenim.
Yeah. Okay. Now the question is, so the relatives are like this. Wife, mother, father, brother, sister, son and daughter, brother and sister that was never married. Once she's married, the Kohen brother cannot become Tamei for it. So the interesting thing, the Mefarshim point out, why does it say here, Le'imei ul Aviv? Why does it say first the mother, then the father? So the answer is very simple. Mother is a bigger chiddush. Why? His father's a Kohen. The mother is not a Kohen usually, but the father's a Kohen. So I would think only for his father he could become Tamei, because the father is also a Kohen. Right? So the Torah says, no, even the mother, who's not necessarily a Kohen, you could also become Tamei for her, and for your father, Now there's an interesting grammatical issue over here. If She'erei means wife, which by the way, not all of Mefarshim learn it, okay? It's a big machlekes. According to this pshat, then it's biblically allowed to become Tamei for a wife, right? But if you hold the She'erei is not a wife, then it's only derived from various things in the pasuk, but it's not explicitly in the Chumash. But the question is like this. If She'erei, and this is for the people that speak Hebrew, if She'erei means wife, then it should say Hakreiva Elov. Kariv is masculine, Kreiva is feminine, right? If She'erei is a wife, most of the time wives are feminine. Yeah, so therefore it should said kim l'she'erei hakreiva elov, which is female, mm-hmm. close to him. Why does it say the masculine version? What? Why don't you look in the Chumash?
No, you're saying it's feminine. It's said in the masculine.
It says in the masculine. Why? If she'erei means wife. So again, the Klei Yoker says like this. To bring down the Gemara in Yevamos, Rabbi Yosi asked Eliyahu HaNavi. Rabbi Yosi met Eliyahu HaNavi in the street, and he asked him the following question. We learned in Chumash that a wife is Ezer Kenegdei, right? A wife is a helper. So he asked Eliyahu HaNavi, in what ways does a wife help the husband? Okay, a very simple question. Typical man question. Amalei. So Eliyahu HaNavi said to him like this. The man brings home the wheat. He brings home the linen. Who makes the wheat into food? The woman. Who makes the linen into garments? The woman. So therefore, he explained, that's the help of the woman. The man brings home the raw goods, and the woman makes it into finished goods. When a person eats food, it becomes part of our existence. So he explains what the Torah is telling us over here, that your wife is you. Therefore, saying it in the masculine, because the wife who gives you food becomes one with you. Because the food is one with you. Who's getting the food? The wife makes the food. So therefore, it uses the masculine expression, he says, because that's cultivated to the mazon nepach al haguf, and it becomes one with the person himself.
What's the difference if it's karov or kova? It's the same idea.
But one is masculine, grammatical. What's the difference if you speak grammatically correct or incorrect? What's the difference? That's my point. As long as the point gets across, who cares? Right?
Karov is also next to someone, and kova is next to someone. So, like, the nuance is just because it's Karov instead of Krova?
Yeah. Why? He has to wait. The Torah speaks according to Diktuk, right? So Diktuk, this is incorrect. Should have said Kreva Ilov. Okay. Now, some Mefarshim, like Ibn Ezra and Unklis, don't learn that She'eda means a wife. They say like this, She'eda Yakadav Elav means the close relatives. Who are the close relatives? Father, mother, brother, sister, you know. The Torah discusses who the relatives are that a person could become Tamei for.
But then where's the wife?
Oh, so they learn it out from different psukim and chumash. From different psukim and chumash. Okay, so these are the people that are currently could become tamei to. Now, what happens if a kohen desecrates himself? First, we're soon going to learn who a kohen is allowed to marry, right? If a kohen marries somebody he's not allowed to marry, we'll learn all the names later, but say a kohen marries a divorcee. He's not allowed to marry a divorcee. So even though his kids are not kohanim, because they're called chalolim, they're not kohanim anymore. In addition to that, he's not honored as a kohen. He doesn't get an aliyah as a kohen. He cannot do birchas kohanim. He doesn't get truma. He doesn't do anything, right? Nevertheless, he still can't go to a cemetery. He can't come along and say, well, I lost the... I lost the benefits of a kohen, so you lose the benefits, but you're still a kohen. You can't go to a cemetery. You can't give up your kohuna, in other words. There are many rabbis from the non-very religious people, you know, for many rabbis, burial funerals are a good income, you know. So I remember in Chicago there was this big rabbi of a not such a firm shul. It was a kohen, but he wanted to do a funeral, so he gave up his kahuna. He gave it up. But you can't do that. You know, you need a kohen is a kohen. The only thing, you don't get the benefits of a kohen if you rebel and sin a sin that is exclusively applying to kohanim.
But his son is a kohen?
No. Completely not.
The benefits also are not given to the son.
The benefits are not. Not only that, the son could go to a cemetery.
Okay.
The kohen marries a divorcee.
So he just stays kohen, but he loses benefit for his whole generation.
But the kids are not even kohenim.
Yeah.
Right. What?
What is
it?
The kid before his transgression. So the kid is kohen or not anymore?
One minute. The kohen marries a divorcee.
The
first kid is a kosher kohen.
Yes.
If a guy marries a kosher wife, and they have a kid, and then later he marries a shiksa and the kid's a guy, that doesn't make the first kid a guy. Yeah, that kid, if the first wife was kosher, if the first kid...
Kohanim, they
have a relationship with Goyot
after what? Before or after they did
Tshuva?
After they did Tshuva.
No.
About the kids?
A Kohen is what? Marries a guy?
Yes.
The kid's a guy?
No, I don't talk about the children. About the Kohen, what happened?
He loses his status also. He loses the status also because she has a din of a zayna.
Can gain it back, though.
No, he can't.
Never?
Oh, if he divorces her, al das rabim, and he does public tshuva that he'll never do it again, and he swears on a public... Yeah.
Oh, that's a good question.
What?
So
what? Can you do that with a divorcee, too?
No.
What?
Can you do that with a divorcee? Yes.
If he divorces the divorcee.
Oh, yeah.
If a kohen... Well, we're jumping the gun. If a kohen marries a divorcee, he has a mitzvah to constantly divorce her. Mm-hmm. Well, it's wrong for incorrect grammar. He has a constant mitzvah to divorce her. He's transgressing a negative commandment.
So once he divorces her, he recoups the benefits of Kohen?
If he divorces her, and is aldas rabim, it says, publicly, he swears he's not going to do such a thing again, he gets it back. Okay, when we learn about the marriages, we'll discuss this.
I'm just curious, since you brought this up, what if he's a Kohen and he sleeps with multiple girls? Does he lose his Kohenship?
No, as long as they're girls that he would technically would be allowed to marry.
No, let's say,
and also, you call, you know, we're going to learn the dinim when we get there. Let's leave the marriage out.
2 months.
Rabbi, you're calling. Didn't get me. I'm not talking about, no lashon hara about Chicago, please.
He didn't get him calling to leave?
No, he wasn't supposed to. Okay. V'lachayse apsula kreva elov. And to a close sister who is not married, as long as she's unmarried, then she's part of the Korean's family. Lo itamo, to her, you could become tamei. Okay? And Rashi says, lo itamo is a mitzvah. In other words, not only are you allowed to, but lo itamo is like a commandment, you should become tamei for these people.
If the sister's been married, but for some reason returns to the family.
No. Even if she married already, and even if the second husband divorced her or died, he does not become tummy for her. He does not become tummy to her. Okay, next pasuk. Lo yitama bal ba'amov, a husband amongst his people should not contaminate himself, lehechalei, to one who desecrates him. Meaning, this pasuk is teaching us a din like this. What happens if a kohen marries a divorcee and she dies? Now it's his wife. Can he go to her funeral? Yeah. So it says no.
He didn't divorce her.
No. But I'm saying, even though it's his wife, and the Torah says a wife you could go to a funeral for, but this is only a kosher wife. Because he wasn't allowed to marry her, the Torah says, Lo yitama bal ba'amav, a husband should not contaminate himself to one who desecrates him. Meaning, this woman that he wasn't allowed to marry desecrates him from being a Kohen. Right? So therefore, he cannot go to her funeral. Because it's not allowed.
Could he get his kahuna back?
Only if he swears publicly not to do it again.
Even after she died, even though he didn't divorce her.
Right.
Well, Rabbi, my question is, does the positive mitzvah outweigh the negative? In other words, if it's a choice between a Kohen marrying at all or marrying a divorcee, marriage is still a positive mitzvah to a Jew. Is it better he marries or not marry at all?
She's only going to divorce.
I'm going to rephrase your question. Okay? If the only way you can go to shul on Shabbos is by driving, it's a mitzvah to go to shul, it's a negative mitzvah not to drive, can the positive mitzvah push away the negative mitzvah?
Yeah,
answer my question.
With respect, it's not a similar analogy, because to marry somebody a kosher Jew is a positive mitzvah. To drive on Shabbos is...
Go to shul's a mitzvah. Huh? Go to shul's a mitzvah.
But not to drive?
Not to drive.
Not to marry Grusha. In other words, mitzvah haba baveda. The only time the concept of esa deichaleisa asa, that a positive mitzvah pushes off a negative mitzvah, which is a concept in halacha, is only when the only way you could do the positive mitzvah is by transgressing the negative mitzvah. For instance, we learned before in in Tazria Mitzvah, if somebody has a leprosy, you're not allowed to cut it off. Right? You cannot cut off leprosy. It's a negative commandment in the Torah. You cannot cut off leprosy. What happens if there is leprosy on the area where you need to do a bris? So now, if you do a bris, what's called mila b'tzaras, right? You have to do a bris mila, but there's leprosy there. Now, you have a mitzvah to do a bris. The problem is, the only way I could do the bris is by cutting off the leprosy. Because otherwise, there's no way I can do the bris, because the leprosy is on the bris, which needs to be cut. So over there, the Gemara says, Esa dechalei sasa. But you can't say that because I need to go to Shon, I can't walk, so therefore I'm going to drive. Daven at home. Marry somebody you're allowed to marry. There's a mitzvah to marry. That doesn't mean you can marry a shiksa, because there's a mitzvah to marry and have kids. I mean, one thing has nothing to do with the next. If it's an aveda, you can't do a mitzvah by an aveda. But
also in his case, if the divorcee is the only woman in the world, he could marry her.
He's right. Yeah.
No.
If he's in Tombuktu,
no.
There's no other way to
have children. Can a mamzer marry a girl if she's the only girl in the world? No.
If she moms a woman, if she moms a girl.
I didn't say a mom's a woman. The only woman left in the world, the whole world is destroyed. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe then it's different.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If the whole world is, if she's the only one, is this divorcee woman.
Only if Hashem would say so.
Hashem will provide the right
woman. Cain and Hevel, who did they marry?
The sisters.
The sisters. By the way, not half sisters, whole sisters.
Twin sister or whatever.
Yeah, well, they may be, but it's still the same father and mother.
Right.
Okay, but over there, Debish Hashem said that was the, you know, the Gulen last year, Alum Chasid Yibana. But there's no, you can't, it says in Shulchan Aruch, there's an expression, mitzvah abba b'aveda, eina mitzvah klal. A mitzvah that comes to us. In other words, let me ask you a question. If the only way you could build a yeshiva is by robbing a bank, you're allowed to rob a bank? Well, you're allowed to if you don't get caught. But I'm saying, what happens if you're going to get caught?
It's not a good example.
No. Why isn't that a good example?
Nobody's robbing here. It's a question of
what?
I have a question, but it's a non-marriage related question.
No, let's go further here. Anyway,
to be alone or to be with people?
Exactly. Or to be with only one woman in the world. She's divorced. Very good question. Very good question. La yikruchu karcha, they should not make bald spots on their head. Okay. Even though this din applies to all Jews, but the Torah is talking about it by Kohenim, and I'll explain why in a second. But the din is like this. In the olden times, the Goyim had a tradition that when somebody died in the family, they would rip out their hair and create bald spots. There was a Goyish religious practice in the olden times of idol worshippers to do that. So the Torah says, "Le'yikruchu karcha bereisham," they cannot make a bald spot on their heads, meaning, not because you're going bald, for a person who died, they should not shave the edge of their beard, and in their bodies, they should not cut a gash. In the olden times, when people died, that's what they used to do. They used to make a bald spot, they would shave the beard, and they would cut their skin, as if to show, you know, torturing sign of mourning. All these things are forbidden to be done. Okay? Now, the point is, why is the Torah mentioning it here by the Kohanim? And not by, if it applies to everybody, why is the Torah saying it here by the Kohanim? So the Mefarshim explain like this. The Sforner explains, because I would think Kohanim would be allowed to do it. Why? Because normally a Kohen cannot become Tomei, right? But for relatives, he could. So I would think, if that's the case, for relatives, maybe a Kohen could do these things also. Make bald spots and rip out their hair and gush their hand. You know, I would think that you should be able to do it because we see the Torah took away the laws of impurity for relatives. So I would think a Kohen could do this, but really it applies to every Jew that you're not allowed to do it. No Jew you're allowed to make. Now, The Kleyoker adds something else to this. Why is the Torah saying this din by Kohanim rather than everybody else? So he says, because when a Kohen dies, it's like a vacuum in God's service. Because now you're missing a Kohen in action. So I would think it's a bigger loss than if a regular Jew dies. So I would think for a Kohen, could do these mourning activities that a regular Jew can't. So the Torah says, even by Kohanim you can't. But the truth is, any part of it you can't. Yeah.
Close relative dies, go to the cemetery or
Kohen Gadol? No, Kohen Gadol was soon going to learn. Kohen Gadol, nobody. Nazir, I honestly don't remember now what the halach is about a Nazir with relative. I don't remember. I don't remember.
Nazir is only somebody want to be Nazir or they...
A Nazir is only if you decide to be a Nazir. Yeah, nobody can make you be a Nazir. I mean, Shimshin Hashem told Mrs. Manoyach that she, but like this, you can't make a Nazir by yourself. I mean, somebody else can't make you a Nazir. Nazirite. Doesn't drink wine, doesn't cut his hair, doesn't go to cemetery.
Do they have to do it verbally or
mentally? Verbally. Now, the Mefarshim explain, what happens when a Kohen does these things? He does make a bald spot. He makes a gash on his finger, in his hand, whatever. He's not allowed to do it. Okay? Can he work in the Beis HaMikdash? No. He cannot perform until the thing heals, or the hair grows back. Once the hair grows back, and the wounds heal, he's back to work. He can do it while the bald spot is, you know, still there, and the gash is still there, but otherwise he could do it. But once it heals, he's allowed to go back to the Beis HaMikdash and work. Oh, I'm sorry, by the way, a Nazir cannot become tummy for relatives. Nazir cannot. And the Mefarshim explain, it's an interesting reason why they explain this, and they say like this, a Nazir chose to be a Nazir. Nothing to do with anybody else but himself. If you chose to be a Nazir, then you cannot go to your parents' funeral or brother's, you know, whatever it is. A Kohen, his status is because of his family. It's not a voluntary decision. You're a Kohen whether you like it or not. Right? So because the family made him a Kohen, it's only proper that he should go to their burial. Understand? Because what made him holy? The family. So it's only right just to go to the family's funeral. Nazir didn't do it voluntarily. He did it voluntarily. Same thing with Kohen Gadol, who's generally on a much higher level. So therefore, they can't go. The only thing, yes, is a mess mitzvah. Even a Kohen Gadol, by the way, if a Kohen Gadol sees a dead body with nobody to take care of it, even a Kohen Gadol becomes tummy. And he doesn't even become tummy for father, mother, for nobody. The only thing a Kohen Gadol could become impure for is a mess mitzvah.
So how would he go into a cemetery and bury it?
He would have to bury, if there's nobody else, he would have to go into the cemetery to bury it. But at the edge of the cemetery, or in the olden times, they didn't necessarily have cemeteries. You bury people.
Whatever, when he becomes tummy.
Who? He has to go par aduma like everybody else. Today, all kohenim are tummy anyway. But they're still not allowed to become tummy anyway.
I mean, they don't bury, they don't go to, they touch all the blood, and they don't...
Let me ask you a question. If somebody touches a dead body, they're avatuma.
Yeah.
Okay, a mess is avia veis, the ultimate. Okay, if somebody touched a dead body, went home, and he bumped into Mr. Cohen, and he gave him shalom aleichem.
Touched him.
He becomes tummy from an avatuma. Mm-hmm. but it has nothing to do with this sin.
I'm
saying a Kohen cannot actively go to a cemetery, touch a dead body, but the sin of not touching somebody who touched a dead body does not apply to a Kohen. It's only direct.
It's only direct.
Even though technically he wouldn't be allowed to go into the Beis Hamikdash, because a person that became Tomei from an Avatuma cannot go into the Beis Hamikdash until he purified himself. Right? So he would still be Tomei, but he wouldn't need the red heifer because he goes to the mikveh that night, he's tar. You know? But I'm saying there wouldn't be a sin against him becoming Tomei.
So the red heifer is only when the contact is direct.
Direct with the dead body. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's enough for today. Thank you.